Okay, today is session 6, class 4 of Sefer HaChinuch, and we're going to do mitzvot 162 through 165,
which is
in the second book, page 183, and hopefully we'll revisit 154 and 73 also. Let's see, where you set the page. Okay, so this week we're focusing on creepy crawly things that we're not allowed to eat. That's what all of them are.
Creepy and crawly.
Right. So 162 is the prohibition against eating creatures that swarm on the earth. 163 is the prohibition against eating minute insects engendered in grains and fruits. 164, the prohibition against eating creatures that swarm in the water. And 165 is the prohibition against eating swarming creatures engendered in decay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
And why would anybody even think about eating those?
Well, so we have to put ourselves back in time. We can't even imagine what people ate today.
I suppose that's true.
You know, I mean, when we read things, my husband, I have mentioned before, loves to live in those old sailing books, right? So the hardtack that they ate, which is kind of like matzah, was hard, dry
bread.
But a significant source of protein was the weevils. All the little worms that lived in that bread. Ugh, totally disgusting. Right. And I read in the OK magazine about a year ago. I don't know why I read this article. It was so disgusting. There's a whole article on maggot cheese.
What?
Yeah.
I've never heard of such a type of cheese.
They just wrote it, I think, really as interest, because obviously it could never, ever be kosher. But there is a cheese that's basically sold on the black market.
Really?
That people love. It can make you really sick. That's why it's on the black market. It's not legal in most countries.
It can make you sick, yes.
But people love it. It's spoiled cheese filled with maggots. And sometimes you have to, like, when you put it on a cracker, you have to eat it covered so they don't jump off your face. But people talked about it in the most glowing of terms.
I can't even imagine.
I know.
So this is all about that.
Right, so I'm not bringing that up really to gross you out, although just a little bit for fun.
Worked.
But the idea is that I want to share, just to, before I start this, is we eat very clean food today. And for thousands of years, people didn't. Bugs were a regular part. I mean, they're still a regular part. We still have to check our food for bugs. But we have to look hard to find a bug. That was not the case for a large part of history, where there was not refrigeration. Things were not fresh. Things were kept for long periods of time. Grains were full of bugs. You know, even in Israel, if you spent any time in Israel living there, and it's different now than it was, but when I lived there 30 years ago, I mean, you had to check really carefully. You know, you checked rice and you always found bugs. And lentils, you had to check in your hand about 10 at a time, both sides, to check every lentil. So part of preparing for Shabbos was Thursday night was bug checking. You checked your spices, all your spices you shook onto a plate to check for bugs. And your rice and your beans, and you checked everything. And there was bugs in almost everything. So that's not the case in this country today. The way we check rice in this country, because we still are supposed to check it, but the way we check it is by putting it in a pot, putting water on it, swirling around with our hands, and just seeing if anything rises. That's it. You hardly ever find a bug, but rice and barley and things, that's how we check it in this country. You don't have to check it on a plate or sprinkle it on a tray like you do in places where there's lots of bugs. But that's this country where our food supply is nice and clean. For millennia, it was not. It was filled with bugs. So how you deal with all those bugs is really a question. So with that
in mind, if that was the case 30 years ago, imagine even more so hundreds and thousands of years
right.
ago.
Right. It was, I mean, the food supply was full of bugs. So the prohibition against eating creatures that swarm on the earth, so that's all kinds of bug things. That would include things that some people do eat, ants and grasshoppers and worms and things that in other cultures people eat. Now, it's interesting, I heard... Pardon? There are certain types of grasshoppers that are kosher.
So, keep that
and the
mind.
Rest are not.
The chocolate-covered ones.
Right, are
right.
The kosher ones.
Right.
Then they're dairy, right?
No, no, no. They can carve if you have the, if you have meat, I guess.
I don't know.
I don't know what insects would be if you have the dairy-free chocolate.
Right, right. So,
I'll keep that in mind the next time I think about eating one.
Right.
How about bees?
No, bees are not kosher.
But the honey is.
Right, but honey is. Honey is the only product of a non-kosher animal that we're allowed to eat. Yeah,
that's because it's so good for you. And it tastes yummy.
Well, you know that famous kosher statement, im ze ta'im, ze kasher. Im ze lo ta'im, kasher l'Pesach.
Okay, then. I'll keep that one in mind.
So that's not actually true for anybody listening to the recording. Just a joke. If it's tasty, it's kosher. If it's not tasty, it's kosher for Passover. Not true. That's a joke. Okay, so this first 162 would be all the things that swarm on the earth that aren't animals, right? So because we know the signs for animals, but what about the other things that aren't animals, all those other types of things? So so then the question is, what does swarming on the earth actually mean? And at this, I'm not sure if at this time they still believed in, what's that called, spontaneous generation or not. But at some point in Jewish law, there was a belief that there was such a thing as spontaneous generation of bugs.
You mean like they just came to exist by themselves?
Mm-hmm. They weren't sure. Like they didn't understand yet.
How they could have existed?
How, for instance, how flour got bugs. Like if you would grind flour and then close it, how do you see bugs?
You see it clean, and then
how are there bugs in it later? So that, you know, they didn't understand it. Maybe there were microscopic eggs that then hatched later. So, but then it was like a halachic question. Is that kosher or not kosher? Because those bugs never swarmed on the earth.
Oh, because they just came to be.
Right. Well,
according
so they did just
the
come
theory.
To be. Right. According. So according to that theory, for sure they just came to be. But even according to halacha, there is some question, and I'm not ruling here, I'm just letting you know this question mark. If they never swarmed on the earth, are they not kosher? So even if the bugs did hatch in flour. So the question is, how did they get there? So I think that if they were laid by bugs in the flour, then they wouldn't be kosher. But some travel through the air. They might have been laid somewhere else, and then, you know, they're microscopic little things and land. So they were never laid by a bug there. And then they hatch in the flower. They might, I'm not ruling, they might be kosher because they didn't ever teem on the earth. So we'll see, for instance, in some fruits.
Right, yeah.
Inside the fruit it could be okay, outside the fruit it's not, because then it's considered, once it goes to the outside, is it teeming on the earth or, you know.
Does it originate on the inside?
Because it originated on the inside,
yeah,
right.
Sometimes,
right. Right, so it is that is a question. All these different things. And for anybody who knows halachically that that for certain things, let's just say raspberries. Raspberries are pretty much incontrovertible that they have so many bugs in them.
You can't eat them?
That you can't eat fresh raspberries.
Really? Mm-hmm.
But we do have fresh raspberries are a very serious problem. Because even if you would soak them, first of all, they'll fall apart with proper like soaking and cleaning. But even if you would do that and you put them on a white paper and just like do it, you still see bugs coming out of them. They're full of bugs.
Yeah.
Try going like that on a white paper or a towel or something like that, and you see bugs.
That would include blackberries too.
No, blackberries are different than raspberries.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, first of all, they're not as
they're not as soft. Maybe
or as
I don't know what it is. Raspberries are known to be infested. I'm sure there is a raspberry on the planet that's not infested, but in general, they're considered to be a regularly infested crop.
Really.
Mm-hmm. So we, in general, don't eat fresh raspberries. However, we do eat blended raspberries, raspberry syrups, raspberry jam. So what's up with that?
Or if you froze them.
Well, so freezing is a question. So then what? So we'll just quickly skip to a halachic piece at the end.
Freezing probably isn't in here.
And again, I'm not ruling on this at all. But just skipping to the...
Are there any other things, like normal things? Because I would never have thought...
That are totally infested? Raspberries are known to be totally infested pretty much all the time.
Okay.
Other berries are considered questionable, and you could check them.
What is it?
See. Questions. All other berries.
Boysenberries.
All other berries are questionable. some more so than others, and sometimes a crop would be infested. So in general, strawberries are considered okay, but occasionally we get a message that that this summer strawberries are infested, and you need to check them extremely carefully or by a different procedure, or some people don't eat them.
Are we talking about like micro, little teeny dots, or are we talking
that you know are bugs though? If you can see it, it's trace.
But we're not talking about like something like that.
Not that big. No, we're talking very little.
Really,
there's a video. I'm not sure who put it on.
Really,
on strawberries, showing this little tiny insect crawling on the surface of a strawberry.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you do have to wash. I mean, strawberries are something that that we eat, but the bugs on strawberries are about the size of the seeds on strawberries, or smaller, so you can't always see them. So you can use a mushroom brush to brush each one under running water and then eat it. That way you remove the bugs, or you soak it in some soapy water and then rinse them under a stream of cold water. There's ways to do strawberries. But basically, strawberries do have to be done, but they can be done, whereas raspberries, pretty much it's thought that they can't be checked properly. They can't be cleaned enough. That being said, let's just look. Let's see, maybe at the end.
What about blueberries? Blueberries, too?
Blueberries, I don't think, are as big a problem.
Because they don't have the seed on the outside.
Well, and also they're basically a sealed
They're
surface.
Sealed things, yeah.
You know, I mean, if they're like grapes or whatever, they have a skin on the outside, so they're not
I guess I think
porous.
That's how strawberries, but what, because of the
well,
little dots?
Well, strawberries are in between.
Yeah, I mean, they're on the outside. So you can brush them off. So let's just look on page 193 for this paragraph at the end of Mitzvah 163. That the mitzvah is in effect every place and time for both man and woman. If someone violated it and willfully ate an entirely whole creature that was not kosher, whether it was alive or dead, so even frozen, right, that would be dead, because freezing only kills it, but doesn't dismember it.
Oh,
even if smaller than a mustard seed, even if it was putrid, so even if it decayed a little bit, but it's whole, whether it was engendered through male and a female creature or from any decaying matter in the world, and it had swarmed on the ground, so whether it was from, no matter how it was created,
like the leg,
if someone ate it in its entirety, he would be punished with whiplashes. But if it was missing even one leg,
you have to eat a whole olive's worth.
Then he would not be whipped until the olives and after it. So what does that mean? So the whipping is only about what is the? That's only about to delineate where you've really transgressed, right? So a whole creature of any size that you could see with your eye, because you know that we have microscopic creatures on our fingers. So every time you're looking at your fingers, you're eating whole bugs. Those bugs are not treif because you can't see them. Sorry, it's true. As much Purell as you use, they just crawl right back. So, yeah.
That's why the 5 or 10 second rule is fine.
Right. I know.
In fact, it engenders good immune system.
I saw a kid.
It's the 5 or 10 seconds.
You know, like you drop something.
Something
on the
drops
ground,
and you pick it up right
the
5 second
rule. Yeah, I saw a kid pick
up
a candy.
Did you do that with your kids when they were little? No.
Oh. I saw a kid pick up a candy in a public place, like in front of a bathroom on the floor somewhere. He was about to put it in his mouth, and the mother said, "No, no, honey, the 5 second rule doesn't apply here."
Yeah, I've heard that too. Yeah, if you're in a place like the ballpark or something,
right? No. Anyway, but the point here is to see that a bug in its entirety is more treif. I mean, the
treifer.
Right, so it's interesting because the question is what, I mean, I was contemplating this, I don't have a full answer for it. What is the level of treifness that we're looking at? Because we understand there's a physical component to it, and there's a spiritual component to it. Somehow the spiritual component is changed when it's not a whole thing, because the transgression is changed when it's not a whole thing. So I'm not saying I understand it, but we do see here that any whole bug is a full avera, even if it's decaying, no matter how it was produced.
So we're saying it doesn't even have to be alive.
It does not have to be alive. No. Actually, being alive is a separate avera. It adds on an avera because that would be avera mina chai. We're not allowed to eat the limb of a living animal. So, and that includes bugs. So if you eat an alive bug, you've transgressed avera mina chai in addition to transgressing this. which is eating the whole
okay.
non-kosher thing. So that would be two separate things. So that is, though, there are, I forgot, there's many different avirus involved in eating bugs. So that is one reason why we're very careful in checking.
So you supposed to, when you have fruit then, you're supposed to wash each little fruit individually and look at each fruit individually, or?
Strawberries? Yeah. Pineapple? No. You can just cut up a pineapple and serve it.
Right.
Melon? Just cut and serve. Yes. Peppers? I think that's one reason why Israeli salad is so popular, because that's peppers,
tomatoes,
cucumbers are all non-Czech vegetables.
Oh, so you don't.
That's all piece
so where
of cake
is
vegetables.
There a list of which ones you need to check more?
So you can look. I'm sure on the OU website there's a list and probably videos on how to do it too. But lettuce, for instance, lettuce is full of bugs. Full of bugs.
The iceberg doesn't have to.
Right, iceberg is not so much.
The one that doesn't have any nutritional value.
Right.
The one with zero nutritional value.
Right.
So the OU website thing?
Yeah, look on the OU website.
There's
then don't type in Torah/index, because that's for the Torah class.
Right.
Just go to the OU website and put in bug checking.
You may not want to look at it.
Yeah. I was
going to
say.
Well, I'm kind of nauseous. But I didn't have food for breakfast.
Well, so it does. It shows you how to check dryer fruit, too. I mean, like in dates, for instance, you're supposed to just break them in half and then check around the seed, because there could be little worms around the seed. Usually, again, in this country, it's nice and clean. But I still don't eat figs, because once in Israel, I bit into a fig without checking it. It was a little bit bitter. For some reason, I swallowed. I don't know why. And then I looked, and it was in my hand. And there was a half a spider's nest.
I knew there was a reason I didn't eat figs.
I know. And I still...
I don't like figs.
It was 30 years ago, and I still can't eat a fig. It was just too much.
I never liked figs.
I could
anyway.
Eat a fig Newton, but not a fig.
When I was a child, we had a bunch of fig trees in our yard.
Ooh.
My mother used to make fig jam.
Me too.
Yeah.
I used to eat them raw.
Yeah. Trees. Yeah. I never ate them raw. I never cared for them raw.
But figs are known, I've watched National Geographic specials, they're known for harboring wasps and all kinds of stuff. Figs are full of things.
Really?
So you just have to open them raw, whether they're dry or fresh. You just open them, each one, first, and just
look at it,
because it can have stuff
in
it.
Yeah.
And there may not be any evidence on the surface of the
right,
apparently.
Right, there may not, because, right, no, with the wasps, there are the wasps that grow in figs, and they just, like, inject their serum into it, yeah, and then they like, make their little nest in it, and then the wasp flies away.
So it's part
all that's left is the nest.
It must be part of the
right.
flower that gets, it becomes... Part of the
okay.
flower
I think just like they can poke your skin without making a hole that you can see, they can poke the fig skin. Yeah. So anyway,
I think we should move on.
Okay.
But then, like the cooked part of it, like you're saying, like a fig Newton, because that's cooked, so you aren't checking that because it's
you're
been
not
processed
checking that because it's been cut apart.
It's
so then it's batel. So we have this concept of batel b'shishim, of nullifying one part in 60. So that is that's a common rule in kashrut and in some other things too. We have that, for instance, with sleep. Sleep is considered 1/60th death. So what does that mean? When you visit a sick person, it's considered as if you've taken away 1/60th of his illness. So 1/60th is a part that's real, but doesn't make a big difference, right? So food is nullified one part in 60. So if you, let's say you're stirring hot chocolate next to your chicken soup and you happen to, you know, turn around quickly and your spoon moves right over, right? And you get a few drops of hot chocolate in your chicken soup. That's less than one part in 60, no problem. So let's say you forgot and you took the spoon out and stirred the pot. Okay, so now your chicken soup is still okay, but your spoon is treif. Because you got more than one part in 60 on your milchik spoon. You immersed the whole thing in hot chicken soup, so you made a treif spoon, but the soup is still okay. So the 1/60th. So a bug part nullifies 1 in 60. A whole bug never nullifies, even 1 in 1,000. So, and that's what it says in here. So, right. So let's just look at 1/63. It's just interesting. So the mitzvah is not to eat any species of tiny swarming creatures that are engendered in plants and fruit from the time they emerge and swarm on the earth. The same law holds for all the time that they are formed in the fruit while it is yet attached to the ground, even though they have not emerged to swarm on the earth, as they are called, that swarm upon the earth. Once they are formed in the fruit while it is attached, so it's still attached to the earth, they can...
So it's like if somebody puts an, the egg or whatever inside the fruit.
Right. So it's not okay. Even though that bug didn't walk on the earth, because the fruit was attached, it's still...
It's the character of the bug.
It's still considered that it's formed upon the earth. Let's see, let's just go down to the bottom of that page. I'm on page 185 now. Some part of the root reasons for the precept have been written above in 159, which we'll look at soon. Its laws, for example, what the sages of blessed memory said, that swarm upon the earth. This would exclude mites in lentils, worms in kalusin, which is a kind of bean, and worms in dates and dried figs. The law is the same for all worms that are formed inside the fruit after it has been picked, because then they haven't swarmed upon the earth, right? Because if the fruit is still attached to the tree, then it's part of the earth, and then the bug that's in it has swarmed upon the earth. But if it formed after it's been picked, when the worm doesn't leave it, so they never crawl to the surface of it, it's just inside, they are not included under this negative precept of the swarming things that swarm upon the earth. Thus, they should be permissible by law, but for one who eats them, there is a modicum of abhorrence for the soul. So let's talk about that abhorrence for the soul for a second. So it's an interesting thing. I heard Esther Wien on TorahAnytime.org. I happen to love her. I've mentioned her before. She's a granddaughter from Shimon Schwab, but she's a huge Talmida Chachama, and she's a huge Talmida Chachama in her own right. So she was discussing, I wish I remembered the pasuk. It talks about taking us up out of Egypt, and usually it says it takes us, the pasuk says that we came out of Egypt. In one place, right after it says don't eat bugs, it says I lifted you out of Egypt. So that's a different language than usual, whereas I just took you out. This is I lifted you up, brought you to a different level. And that's connected with the eating of bugs. That you don't eat bugs because I lifted you up out of Egypt. So we learn from that that the eating of bugs is bad for the soul, and that Hashem gave us a gift that we're naturally disgusted. Jews are disgusted by bugs. We are not disgusted by pork or by shellfish necessarily.
We aren't.
We might be culturally, but there's not
you're
a
saying
visceral.
It's not, I see.
You, if you see a pork chop. I mean, you might there may be a visceral reaction, certainly to bacon, which is the iconic pork, right? So some Jews may feel ew. Some Jews might think yum. It smells delicious. But if you see a pork chop, it doesn't gross you out, right? Whereas if you see a bug, it does. So, or if you see, let's see, a piece of crab. Maybe if you see a whole crab, it looks like a bug, so it does kind of gross us out. But if you see crab meat on a plate, it doesn't gross you out. But if you see a bug, it does. So the gross out factor is a Jewish gift. Not everybody has
so
that.
So we shouldn't really work hard at getting our kids so that they don't get grossed out by bugs.
Right, well, eating.
You know what I'm saying?
You don't want kids to be freaking out every time they see a Miller moth flying in the house, which, you know, fortunately my kids are just old enough now that they're not screeching anymore. But I spent many years and summers worrying about all those moths and how they freak the kids out. So you could probably work on that they don't have to freak out when they see a spider
just
or they shouldn't eat it, right? But they should be grossed out about eating it. So when I read that article in the New York Times about the entomologist conference held in the Waldorf Astoria, and it had printed the menu.
Oh, really?
Every single dish was bugs.
No.
Every single one. From the appetizer to the main course, to the salads, to the side dishes, to the desserts. Every single dish had bugs in it because it was a bug person's conference. So just reading it was like reading that article on the buggy cheese,
is that
you know.
Evidence?
Oh, they did it on purpose. Oh yeah.
Oh, I'm sure.
Oh yeah. Oh no, for sure. It was, you know, sautéed worm topped spaghetti, and it was, you know, honey ant parfait for dessert. Everything had bugs in it, and you had your choices of entrees, you know, like in any fancy affair.
Bug, huh? By name, but not literally. Not actually.
Oh, no, actually. It was actually. So it should, I mean, so if we're wondering how did they eat it, it helps to understand that that's a Jewish question. There are other people who like bugs. And because they don't have that Jewish disgust. So it's interesting also that it's not considered kafira for a Jew to eat pork, but it's considered kafira to eat a bug.
What's kafira mean?
So kafira means to be kofer be'ikar, means to reject a basic principle of faith. So if a Jew will say, well, I just don't believe in the coming of the Messiah, I don't believe in resurrection of the dead, I don't believe, those are principles of Jewish faith.
Say that again, kefira?
Kefira.
Kefira. Oh, kefira. Kefira.
Mm-hmm. This word is the root of the South African pejorative.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Because they're heathens that reject basic principles of God. That's where it comes from. It's morphed a little bit, but that's where it comes from. So somebody who's kofar, or somebody who is expressing kafira, is somebody who's rejecting a basic tenet of Judaism. So it's not considered, it's a transgression, but it's not considered kafira to eat a pork chop.
That's interesting.
But it's considered kafira to eat a bug because it goes against our basic nature. The idea is, a Jew who is naturally disgusted by bugs would only eat a bug as a statement of, I don't care. I'm eating this anyway. Even though it disgusts me, I'll put it in my mouth because I don't care about your laws, right? Or to show you that I could do it anyway. So it's considered kafira to eat a bug. It's not considered kafira to eat other trace things.
If you were in a situation where the only thing available to eat, let's just say, would be a non-kosher
right.
thing. I mean, let's
always
just,
to save a life,
you can
except
you
for one category,
which is
you're washed up on the desert island.
Right.
All they have is lots of weevils and worms. You can eat them and stay alive, no problem.
Okay.
The time when you can't is when somebody's asking you to do it specifically to go against God.
So right, okay.
Right. So as a statement, like,
right.
So if they take you up in the public square, even if you eat trafe at home in your life, whatever it is, but and they say eat this pork to show, that we're making a Jew do it and you're doing it in public, you have to, and otherwise I'll kill you. You have to say, pull the trigger, right, because I can't in public do that. I can't transgress that way. It's a different type of transgression. But just to save your life, you need to eat something trafe because you need the nutrients in it. And I think there was a question about that with the establishment of National Jewish Hospital. There was a whole controversy because National Jewish was established. It's a TB hospital. Was a TB hospital, right? They believed at the time that the people who founded that hospital believed that meat and dairy together in a meal was the healthiest thing.
In terms of indigestion.
And that's what would build up these TB patients and make them healthy so they could recover. So they served meat and dairy in every meal. And that's why JCRC was founded for frum Jews who needed a place to go where they weren't going to be serving them trafe every single meal.
For example, the situation came up like in concentration camps or something.
For sure, then you can eat. Right, yeah. Tarfus, yeah. And Rabbi Israel Tauber talks about it. I mean, he's a famous Rav today and a Holocaust survivor, child survivor. And he talks about, how a grenade or something landed in a horse, killing the horse and cooking the meat around it. And his father took the meat and fed it to him and his brother and said, eat. You have to eat. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, you are allowed to eat trafe to save your life, but it's different than making a choice.
Right.
Not right. Okay. So that's 163 is the minute insects engendered in grains and fruits. And it talks about if they emerge into the free air but didn't touch the ground. So look on page 187, also another... in the middle.
This is like gross.
Yeah, it really is. If the worms of the fruit emerged into free air but did not touch the ground, if they left the fruit and fell into the mouth of someone eating, and so likewise, if they came out and settled on the outside of the fruit, do we consider the outside of the fruit as the earth? So too, if the worm separated from the fruit and fell to the ground after it was dead, all these are forbidden out of doubt whether we should decide to say that they are a swarming creature on the ground or not.
So the bottom line is any bug, whether it's in fruit, not in fruit,
we don't do bugs.
Not in a vegetable, you just don't eat it.
Right.
I mean, that's sort of...
Right, but there's still questions.
Peaches, for example. Peaches always had lots of times peaches that you grew in your yard, not so much the ones you buy in the store, but the ones you grew in the yard always had little worms in them and stuff. You always had to be very careful.
Right, of course.
And they're always obnoxious.
No. But that's because you're not spraying your tree.
Right.
Right, I mean, the ones from that.
Sometimes you can find them in the ones you buy, too.
Probably, I'm sure, but...
But we don't see that much today.
Not as much
I mean, it's different,
I find
Right. Not so much.
They bred things very differently. I mean, I remember as a young mother.
So much with whatever.
Right, right. I remember buying strawberries, and if you didn't eat them by that afternoon,
oh, yeah, they were
certainly
spoiled.
By the next day, they were spoiled. But strawberries were a buy and eat that day product.
Well, and you could also only get them like for a few, mm-hmm. you know, weeks.
Right.
The most.
Right. And now today, even if you leave them in the back of the fridge and there's four left in the box, they're not spoiled. They're just shriveled.
Yeah.
You know, they're not moldy.
They must put something on them.
I don't know what they do to them, but they're not. They don't taste as good either. No. They are not the same strawberry, and neither is a lot of the stuff
they're
eating.
Green, right. Green.
Probably. They do that with most fruit.
But this is nothing about mold or anything like that.
No.
I mean, not that I want to eat mold, but I mean...
No, that's not trafe.
You know what? They don't taste
that's not trafe. The bugs are trafe, but the mold is not.
Or whatever. They're so good.
That's correct. Okay, so let's just look on page 189, just thinking again about the olden days, because this is not something, thank God, that we run up against. But it would seem, second paragraph, it would seem that even the caution, you shall not make yourself abhorrent, does not apply to them, and this is why, so the other kinds of bugs... You need not afraid. Let's see, where is it? Did I just miss that whole paragraph? I put my little flag there. Okay, so it's really 187. They have blessed memory. Likewise, permitted water in vessels that engendered worms. And even pits, ditches, and caves filled with water. Any body of collected water, they taught that a man may bend down and drink of them as long as the worms did not go out to some other place. So meaning, if you have a wormy vessel, right? So again, we're not thinking about today. But thinking about a time when you have great clay vessels in your yard that catch the rain or whatever, but there's cracks in them. They're old. They may be generation to generation. It's not like, you know, every bride and groom gets new stuff, you know, at that time. So you have disgusting, old, wormy vessels that hold your water. Can you drink that water?
Yes.
So that's what it's saying. It's here you can, even if they come out of the walls of the vessel or the pit, but they return back into it, you're allowed to drink from it. Because the walls are where they grow. They don't live in the water, although they come out and they go back in, but you're allowed to drink from that water. So, right. So
I don't think we would want to drink it anyway.
No, we don't want to drink it. But that's what I was saying. It's hard for us
there?
To understand.
What's the difference there? Because
necessity.
I mean, everybody had to keep their water in these clay vessels, you know, mm-hmm. particularly in the Middle East, because mm-hmm. it was a shortage of water. So, of course, that had algae and scum and God knows what. I mean, what? I don't understand. What?
Well, so that's why, first of all, I'm extremely slowly, like a half a page a month, reading this book called History of the World in Six Glasses, which is about the different types of drinks that they made. So I'm really only on wine. It starts with beer. But it starts with beer because people did have such scummy, disgusting water mm-hmm. that
That's
they would
used to drink.
They would make yeah. it into mm-hmm. beer because that was cleaner mm-hmm. and better for your
well,
digestion.
Well, same thing with wine. I mean, mm-hmm. that's why yeah. even... Mm-hmm.
Wine was the fancy beer, right?
Yeah, even young people were fed.
Right, right, because it was
healthier.
Much healthier than water. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because water was disgusting. So it's interesting just to think about a world in which water is disgusting.
And beer and wine were
And
preferable.
Beer and wine were, yeah, you give it to kids because it's much, much cleaner and much better for you. But sometimes you still need to drink water. So the question is, if you know the water's infested with bugs, so you would want the water, the cup of water that you're drinking to not have bugs in it. You're not going to be drinking the bug, but you know that it's in a vessel that's infested. Can you drink it? That's the question. So it's saying, yeah, you can. In general, the way it works for us today is, let's say a fly lands in our glass of whatever. So we might not want to drink it. We're very wealthy. We can pour it out and just pour a new glass. We don't even think twice. But let's say we were hauling that water or whatever it is. So you just squeezed that fresh lemonade and you don't have any more lemons. You can just take a spoon and take the fly out and then the whole thing's kosher. You're not allowed to drink it with the fly in it. Mm. But once you remove it, you can. And that was one, it's interesting.
Makes it okay.
Yeah, so that halacha is one of the halachas that Haman brought to Ahasuerus and said, those Jews, they hate you so much. Let me show you how much they hate you. If you touch their wine, they won't drink it. But if a fly lands in it, they'll just take the fly out and they can drink it. So he was conflating
these
two halachas, right? Because if a non-Jew touches non-mavushal wine, non-cooked wine, it does render the wine non-kosher, right? But if a fly lands in it and you take it out, the wine is not kosher. Hmm. It's two different reasons why. But Haman brought that to Ahasuerus to make Ahasuerus be mad at the Jews and to help him.
Now, we don't differentiate between worms and insects, kind of.
Right, no, crawling things that swarm upon the earth. So that includes, that includes worms.
Those are different kinds of, I think they're different categories.
Right, no, it doesn't matter the category of, right. Because it does, that's why we looked at that halachic paragraph at the end. It doesn't matter if it comes from a male and female together, or I don't know if there's such a thing as abiogenesis, whatever. Right. You know, but however it came about, whether it was spontaneously generated, whether it came from an egg, where it came from fertilizer, whether it came from a coupling of a male and a female, whatever it is, it's still a thing that swarms upon the earth, a minute thing that swarms upon the earth. So, and that's a separate category than other animals. Okay, so now let's look. Okay, 164, similar. The prohibition against eating creatures that swarm in the water. So here there's a whole long discussion between the Rambam and the Ramban. He brings this whole, he refers to it. Because they both agree that you can't eat any of these swarming things. And just like the swarming things upon the earth, you know, the halachic signs are for four-legged things. And we know we can't, there are certain bugs you can't eat, but what about all the other categories? Can't eat those either. So now the question is, in the swarming things in the water, is that covered by don't eat disgusting things, which is one of the halachas? Or is this a separate thing? Or could it be covered by the fish? If you say anything that lives in the water, the two signs that make it kosher are fins and scales, and so therefore everything else. So why do you need this halacha? So Rambam and Ramban are arguing, they both agree you can't eat that stuff, but the question is, what's the halacha that covers it? Right, so
well, and we have a general principle that nothing is, if it was included in the overall thing, why would you even have it?
Right,
why would you need it?
Right, why do you need
and
to say that?
Everything has a purpose.
Right, so it is a question, and there's quite a bit of discussion here, and they discuss a certain creature. Where's the name of that certain creature? Pitutha.
Did
I read that right? Right. If one ate a pitutha, a small water creature, he is given, I'm not good at reading letters like that, but he's given whiplashes four times, and if an ant, he's whipped five times. If it's a hornet, he's whipped six times, and one explains as a matter, and each explains as a matter appears to him. So they discuss, how many times can you be whipped over eating one thing? Right? Which is not about somebody actually getting whipped. This is a theoretical discussion, right? So the question is, can you... They both, each one of them over certain things agree that you could be whipped several times over eating the one thing. But the question is, why? So again, this is all theoretical discussion. So one holds, it's because there's six different prohibitions on the one thing.
So you get one lashing for each prohibition.
For each prohibition. And the other one holds, no, it's six different creatures in the one thing. The one thing could be like if it has wings, but it also walks and it also swims, then it's a swarming thing in the air, a swarming thing in the earth, and a swarming thing of the water. So it's three different creatures, so that each of those prohibitions hold. It's not that it's Aver Mina Chai, and it's the whole bug, and it's the icky thing. So that's three different prohibitions. You understand the difference between the arguments? Which you don't really have to understand. I decided not to go into that deeply because that's not the goal. I really thought about, should I really work on this argument and try to present it properly and talk about the halachic differences? And I said, no, because that's not the purpose of this class. It's to go through all the mitzvahs and just give a taste. But you should know that Rambam and Ramban here have a very long argument, and he chooses not to go into it also. He says, if I were to write the entire thing out, it would be more than it would fill a large scroll, and that's not the purpose of this work. But
which one chooses not to go?
No.
The author of the Sefer Chinuch chooses not to go deeply into that argument either.
All of this.
Right. It's too much to go through the whole thing. But in general, we have a principle that you can only be punished once over one act, even if the one act is many different transgressions. So that's a general principle. Let's see, what did I have on this next page? But they do discuss why. Let's see.
So Rambam, never give two whippings for one transgression.
Right, and the Ramban was
holding one for each.
Right. Let's see. Let's skip this thing. Okay. So on page 199, so let's just look at the... Oh, so here's an interesting... Page 197, I just want to look at the bottom of this page, because this is an interesting thing. And I think it's interesting in the light of today and the way certain things are decided today and the way sometimes people aren't given their own space to make a decision, but the space is there. So I just want to point out how he says this here. So let's read this whole paragraph. As for an injunction about swarming creatures of the water, Ramban of blessed memory derives it from a verse in the section about the ban on forbidden fish. And anything that has not fins and scales of all the swarming creatures of the water is an abhorrence to you, from Leviticus 11:10. This is truly something to be learned from its subject. I'm not sure where that phrase is from. Let's see, it's by Rabbi Ishmael in the introduction to the Sifra, that phrase. For in this section, scripture speaks of a ban on fish that grow in water, and then it speaks also of the swarming creatures of the water. Now here's the interesting sentences. Listen to them, my son. And if you shall merit to understand them, choose for yourself by your mind. So basically saying, here's two huge sages with opposing opinions.
You decide which one you
think is
right.
Now you work it through. Listen, it does say work it through.
Right.
Take the time to pay attention, to understand it. If you merit to pay attention and understand it, then
you can
choose for yourself by your own mind. Both these and those are the words of the living God. This is a phrase from the Talmud. Elu ve'elu divrei Elohim chayim. These and these are both the words of the living God.
From Hillel and
Shammai. So this is to discuss the arguments of Hillel and Shammai. That phrase
That's
is used regularly
from.
To discuss their arguments. So it's a phrase that we use regularly, especially when you have two greats who have opposing opinions that you can't see a reconciliation between. It's not like one says red and the other says blue and so you agree on purple. It's just totally different, and they hold it has to be red and they hold it has to be blue, and that's all there is to it. So you can say this and this are the words of the living God. We Jews live with contradictions, and we live in the tension of opposites, and we live with things that we can't make sense of, and it's okay. It's nice in a group of this age that people can understand that. It's often with younger people that's much harder to understand that there is a world of gray in which you live. It's not black or white. Right?
Can't get that.
Gray.
It's a big problem with that.
Right. So,
except that ultimately, Hillel
prevailed
Shammai in the Torah.
Yes.
Most of his findings were really the ones that the Mishnah ended up using.
Right. So sitting here at the table, and let's just imagine that we are of the great sages, or let's just imagine being what it would be like, being inside the head of a great sage. So sitting around a table as great sages, we could discuss from today until tomorrow. But when you stand up and walk away from the table, you have to behave a certain way. You can't behave red and blue. You can only behave red or blue. You have to pick one. You have to. It can't be both. It can only be both, theoretically. That has to be one in behavior. So, and maybe it could be purple. But you have to pick how it's going to be. So, that being said, the Mishnah in general does choose to hold by Hillel. That's the general rule of the Mishnah, that Hillel wins. But that doesn't mean that Shammai's opinions are wrong. It means that the way we behave is according to Hillel. That's the difference. So we're not saying that they're wrong. Okay. There's that. Let's see. 165, the prohibition against, okay, this is extra disgusting, against eating swarming creatures.
This is extra disgusting.
Because this is swarming creatures engendered in decay. So as the thing starts to decay and bugs come, so I would guess that's probably maggots, right? And maggots might have looked like they spontaneously generate, if you don't really understand that flies bring maggots and that maggots turn into flies. Anyway, those things are treif, no matter how they get there. Let's now look, we're going to have to go further into that because we are disgusted enough, but let's just look back at 154, which is in this book.
Page 151,
but I want to look at page 153. So this is the mitzvah of the prohibition on non-kosher animals. So you can't eat non-kosher animals. So at the root of the precept lies what we wrote about in the injunction against treifa. So that's 73, if we get to that, but we're running out of time. that God knows that in all foods which he removed from the people he chose, elements injurious to the body are found. Now, so let's just look at the sentence again. God knows that in all foods that he removed from the people he chose. He didn't say all people can't eat this.
The people he chose.
Just the Jews. Just the Jews, right? So the foods that he removed from the Jews include elements that are injurious to the body. Our bodies being vessels and instruments for the souls to work through them and be ennobled through their good deeds. So clearly, it's not that God's mean to the non-Jews and says you can eat whatever you want that's going to destroy your bodies. That's not what it is, because you see here from the way that it's worded, it's injurious to the body, but it's injurious to the body's ability to be a vessel and an instrument to the soul. Right, that's what it's saying here. For this reason, he removed from them the injurious food elements so that souls can do their functions, not so that the bodies could be healthy. That's a separate thing. You are supposed to also eat in a way that your body will be healthy. But all these things, the not eating of creepy crawlies, it could be totally healthy. You know, there are cavemen, whatever, there's shows about, you know, living on nature or whatever they're called, where people eat bugs and they're just fine. They eat worms and they're just fine. It doesn't make you sick if you know how to eat it right. So that's not about damaging your body. It's about damaging your body as a vessel of the soul, so that we don't want to include a bad temperament or a stupor of the heart, which will shut the door before them, as I wrote there in the earlier section. Let me just find that spot and read it to you. Okay, so 73, it says, which is the mitzvah of not to eat meat from an animal torn by beasts, not to eat a trefa. At the root of this precept lies the reason that the body is an instrument of the spirit. With it, it carries out its activity. Without it, it can never complete its work. Therefore did it, the spirit is the it, therefore did it come into the shadow for the spirit's benefit and not for its harm. For God never does harm, but only does good to benefit all. Thus we find that the body at its command is like a pair of tongs in the hand of the blacksmith. With it, he can produce a tool fit for its purpose. So there's interesting stuff in here that continues along that vein. But the point is that the food that we eat not only maintains our body physically, but maintains our body as a vessel for the soul's work. Which is why, as Jews, with a specific type of soul that's different than souls of other human beings, we have additional things that we can't eat because we have additional fine-tuning that has to happen to our body so that our special soul can work through a body that's fine-tuned in a certain way. So, that's it. At the bottom of the sheet, I have Kedoshim to you. You should be holy. Part of being holy is separate and apart, and part of these food laws are about separating us as the people so that our souls can function through a separate type of a body. Okay.